The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov.
Okay, Tov, Shavua Tov. Nice to talk to you again. And just for the record, I also like that James Blunt song.
Yeah, I think it's very nice. You know, South Africans are just a little bit disgruntled this morning. Alcohol has been banned. And, yeah, so who could blame us for not enjoying anything this morning?
Did no one see that coming?
No.
Storage going on.
No, this is my worry. Never mind. Anthony. We're going to have to make a plan. I'm going to buy some pineapples this afternoon. And no, Zanati, that's the thing.
I have a spare bottle of whiskey for you if you need one, Howard.
Right. If only planes were operating. All right. But Israel, not so simple either. People there also not so happy. Protests held across Israel over the last few days demonstrating against actions taken by the government in dealing with the coronavirus pandemic. So what are Israelis protesting about?
Well, Saturday night saw massive demonstrations across Israel. There was an attempt in Kikar Rabin, which was really the focal point of the demonstrations. There was an initial attempt to try to keep social distancing. I don't know if you've ever seen a demonstration that maintained social distancing. Neither have I. And that's the problem you see when these demonstrations come together. The police gave approval for, I think, 1,800 people to turn up at Kikar Rabin in order to demonstrate. In the end, I think there were like 10,000 people or something like that. And it became a little violent. People really, really frustrated. Police were involved. There was some damage caused. People decided to flow onto the main highway in order to protest their frustration. The protest was labeled as apolitical. I don't think there's ever been such a thing as an apolitical demonstration, because by definition, you're protesting against something, and that something happens to be in the government. So by definition, I think it was always going to be political. But I think the message of apolitical was to try to prevent politicians from getting involved and from becoming the focal point, and rather just to allow the man in the street to have his say. And to make known the frustrations. These frustrations, by the way, not only in Kikar Rabin, but were also expressed at junctions across the length and the breadth of Israel, thousands of people turning up to voice their frustration. People are suffering massive economic hardship. The government has implemented this huge economic plan that is supposed to help people, to give money to people who have lost their jobs, who have been at home on leave without pay, without any income. The government has agreed to make money available. The bureaucracy has made it almost impossible for many of the people who really, truly deserve this money to get their hands on it, to get their hands on it quickly enough, and to get their hands on the amount of money that has been promised. In many cases, money has been promised in certain amounts. When it comes down to the government bureaucracy giving the money, making the money available, then all of a sudden it becomes a lot less than what has been promised. So there's been a lot of frustration, particularly amongst people who are self-employed, who feel that they've been badly done by. And I think, you know, it's interesting to see that, for example, in the UK and the US, they decided just to send people money in the mail. No application required, no checks, no qualification required, just have the money. And people were forced to spend this money at brick and mortar shops in order to try somehow to generate economic activity. So not online, but go to a store. You have to actually magnetically swipe the card that's given to you in order to spend this money that the government's made available to you. In Israel, they haven't adopted that approach. They've said the money will be made available only to those people who really qualify and deserve it, which I think is a good way of doing things, as long as the people who really need the money actually get it. And that's, I think, where most of this frustration has come about. Also, a lot of frustration amongst people who feel that they've been closed down unjustifiably, particularly, for example, gyms, where apparently a studio can remain open, but a gym, like an exercise room, not. Swimming pools, public swimming pools have been closed, whereas swimming pools at hotels remain open. So there's been a lot of protest amongst those people saying this is unfair. And by the way, interestingly, a lot of statistics now available about how many people have been infected. Apparently swimming pools are not a source of infection. In fact, there is no real statistic available in Israel as to how many people have actually been infected by being at swimming pools. Interestingly, only 30-odd people were infected by going to a gym, which, considering that we've got more than 1,000 new infections every day, seems an astonishingly low number. And the gyms are using that as justification to say, don't close us down because we need to stay alive. We need to feed people and families. We've got a huge number of employees that we want to keep on. Please help us to stay alive. Interestingly, also restaurants, also very, very few people having been infected at restaurants and at pubs that have now been closed down. So it seems as if though, you know, if we use those statistics that the government is going to the wrong places to close things down. 170 people, for example, were infected at weddings and wedding functions. So that's a little bit more than some of the other places. And so a lot of consternation and aggravation at the moment, and also a lot of frustration amongst some of the Haredi communities whose neighborhoods have been completely shut down. And they feel that's unjustified because, of course, everybody's pointing everywhere else to say, if we're shut down, why are they not shut down? Because they also have a high number of infections. And so there's also a lot of frustration being expressed to politicians about the lack of equality, the lack of consistency that's being applied across these rules, and a lack of logic to some degree. Why are swimming pools in hotels okay, but public swimming pools are not okay? So now we're beginning to ask those questions, and in fact, the High Court is also going being called upon to rule on these issues. Another major issue is this drug called Remdesivir, which is a drug that has been produced by Gilead and which has been shown to be very, very effective inhibiting the virus in human lung cell cultures. And apparently the U.S. government has bought up almost all of the supply of Remdesivir that's available. The Israeli government and the hospitals have been trying to get their hands on it because apparently this is now the new latest treatment. But of course, we have a shortage of the drug. There is talk about Mylan being prepared to produce a generic version of the drug, but apparently that's now the latest hot thing around the world in order to get your hands on Remdesivir in order to treat people with corona. Israel's numbers continue to go up, unfortunately, more people seriously unwell. And so, you know, there's a lot of work that needs to be done here, both in terms of fighting the virus itself from a medical perspective, as well as getting the economy moving and doing the right economic, taking the correct economic measures in order to allow people to keep, you know, paying their daily bills, because now this has become a very, very big issue indeed.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because it's almost, you know, you can see the same kind of a thing happening here. People saying, well, why are you allowing this in South Africa and not that? And why, the reality is that, that governments are trying to do their best. I do think some of the decisions are poor decisions, but, I do like to think that, in general, it comes, from a good place. And with the issue around, Remdesivir, it might be in short supply in Israel, but, as of last week, we haven't actually even been able to use it here yet in South Africa.
This is now apparently the next hot, the major hot thing at the moment.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I think a lot of drugs are also being used a little bit before the time that they would ordinarily be used because of the urgency of having to treat it. Some of these drugs are being used before the full tests have been undertaken, just in order to see on the fly whether they're working, and Remdesivir is one of them, and it seems to be working, at least from what the anecdotal evidence suggests.
Yeah, let's just talk about what's going on in Iran. More suspicious explosions happening in Iran. It's getting stranger and stranger. What is this? Do we know anything?
We don't know anything. All we know is that these explosions are taking place. The latest ones took place in Tehran itself. Reports of gas explosions. It seems as if the Iranian government is really unsure how to respond to this. On the one hand, they've tried to deny that there's too much of a major issue, but it seems as if at least the attack at Natanz that we discussed last week has been a lot more serious than even the Iranian government has been prepared to admit to, and they have admitted that something strange happened there and that there has been some sort of an attack, although they didn't really expand too much on it. So the news coming out of Iran is very, very unclear, very disparate, very unofficial, obviously, because whatever we hear from Iran is not coming from official sources. But there is certainly evidence that there is a lot of stuff happening in Iran at the moment, all over the place. It's not just one attack and go home. It's an attack here and an attack there. It's another explosion. It's another a few people killed over here. It doesn't seem to be coincidental. This seems to be an orchestrated series of events. And there are some people who are saying that the Iranian government has been weakened as a result of this, these events that are going on. I would have thought that if Israel is involved, that this would all be focused against the Iranian nuclear program and, of course, the decision-making tree that comes around that. But we really don't know exactly what's going on. We have no idea what the particular targets are, particularly the ones that have taken place, the explosions within Tehran city itself. It's all very, very secretive indeed. Of course, the Israeli government will not be saying anything. The Iranian government is not saying anything. So we're having to rely upon reports on the street, which are very unclear. I don't know. It's all quite strange.
It is indeed very, very strange. A wealthy American has reported to be interested in buying El Al.
So, yeah, this is an American who actually lives in Israel now. He's made Aliyah a few years ago. Eli Rosenberg is his name. He's the son of a very well-known American billionaire entrepreneur called Kenny Rosenberg, who is the founder and the CEO of one of the U.S.'s largest healthcare chains, nursing homes and things like that, made his money doing that sort of thing. Eli Rosenberg himself is 30 years old. He came to live in Israel a few years ago. That is definitely a requirement for anybody who's interested to buy out Israel's national airline. They would not sell it to anybody who is not Israeli, has Israeli citizenship. So this is an interesting one. I'm not exactly sure whether Kenny Rosenberg or Eli Rosenberg, the son, I'm sorry, will actually get authority, because of course he'll need to be authorized by the government. He has to go through a whole lot of committees and checks and balances to make sure that he is worthy of placing the national airline in his hands. So this is going to be a long, drawn-out process where we're not even sure what the outcome will be. But obviously a man with means and has, I think, positive intentions to try to help Israel's national airline get out of its current situation. So it's going to be fascinating to see what happens next with regard to Eli Rosenberg's attempt to take over El Al.
Interesting times, indeed. You know, it was so interesting, it was so fascinating. A friend sent me a message to say, just so you know, last year this time we were in the Kruger. We were there with a whole lot of friends. And I thought, wow, looking back exactly a year ago, we were in the Kruger. Who could have imagined what the world would look like today, exactly 1 year later? It's unimaginable. It's unrecognizable. Had you told us what we would be dealing with then, today, in exactly 1 year, as we drove around the Kruger, I would have thought that you were completely mad.
And what's more, none of us can really predict what's going to be in 3 or 6 or 9 months. I mean, a year ago, you might have thought that you could predict what would be in a year's time. Now, I don't think anybody has the audacity to even think that they can predict what will be around in 12 months from now.
Absolutely right. It is 8:01, Anthony Reich. Thank you. As always, apologies that we came to you slightly late.